The views expressed on this Turnbuckle Tabloid live stream or Turnbuckle Tabloid podcast episode do not reflect the views, thoughts, or opinions of the RageWorks brand, including the RageWorks podcast network, RageWorks content partners, advertisers, and affiliates. Viewer and listener discretion is advised.
Bring the in-ring action home to your tabletop with the number one wrestling card game in the world, Super Show the Game. And live all your wildest wrestling fantasies without ever taking a chair shot. Available on supershowthegame.com. Order today and join a spectacle so grand it can only be called the Super Show.
Turnbuckle Tabloid.
3, 2, 1.
This is Larry Legend, and you're listening to the Turnbuckle Tabloid Podcast.
Give me that fucking mic! Turnbuckle Tabloid, cutting a promo.
So, ladies and gentlemen, it begins, it ends, and we move on to life after the Thunderdome. WWE has put in the can their last Thunderdome, I guess, for now. Unless some forsaken
until Delta,
until fucking the Delta variant, and then these fucking idiots don't fucking get the realization that you can't die from this shit. But okay, whatever. You keep going without a vaccine or not wearing your mask. Good luck for you guys. Alrighty then.
It stinks because I know people personally who haven't gotten vaccinated yet, and their answer, the reason why is that it's over. If I lasted the pandemic without getting COVID, why am I gonna get it now? It's basically over and done with. So I'm like, yes, as the people who are dying with a slight death increase, if you check the news, and you know, it's not over until it's over, fam, and it's not. So
hey, listen, like I said, more power to you. Don't take it. It's fine. It's cool.
But now it's affecting my job because we're trying to get the ruling where if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask in the apartment building, because everyone in my building's vaccinated. They did a check. Like, every single person came down and said, I'm vaccinated. We checked. Every single person is vaccinated, resident-wise. Mm-hmm. And they want to get the masks off when you walk in the building. My union, which, by the way, congratulations to me. I don't know if I... quick update. I got a letter in the mail yesterday. I'm officially in my union. Thank you. Thank you. I'm officially in my union, which is bigger than, you know... It's so sad how when you're a kid, you think, hey, I got this new toy. Round of applause. I got this. No, I got my union. That's an adult thing to be proud of.
Definitely a big fucking thing to be proud of.
Hell yeah.
And that union is amazing. So good going with that.
Yep, they'll take care of me. So I already read the information on the letter. I spoke to my union guy at work, and I'm basically set. So good on me on that. But they're trying to get the masks off. In order to do that, they need to talk to our union about it. And our union agreed that they'll agree to the compromise on if all of our workers are vaxxed. Because if everyone's vaxxed in the building, then it's fine. And the only person who people who need to wear masks are delivery people and people who come in who are out of the building. I know people, I'm not going to say it, but like, people need to get vaxxed in my building. And like, there was a huge fight on that the other day. So like, hey, listen, if you don't want to get it, you don't want to get it. But you're screwing everyone else's fucking chances of freedom.
Listen, you know? that's their prerogative. That's their prerogative. If they want to do that, hey, whatever. That's whatever floats your boat. I just want to hear no
bitch. What do you think about their excuse? Like, oh, well, it's already over, so why do I care? I'm like, what do you think about that?
I mean, you go on what? I don't really care. I don't care whatever excuse it is. I just don't want to hear you bitching when you can't do certain shit, and then we go back on fucking lockdown. You know, that's on your fucking that's on your fucking on your chest to have to carry. That's your bullshit. You know, but you know, to each his own. But with that being said, going into the pandemic, it was a little over a year in which.
Can you believe that? That's crazy.
Everyone got affected by this, not only in the States, but globally. Everybody was hit by this. And from entertainment to sports to anything up and down when it came to doing, being a part of, or trying to function or have some kind of normality happen during this thing, we pretty much was told to stay home and just watch everything from the tube or on our phones. And one way that we had to deal with that was in our line of profession was in wrestling. And yeah, it was tough because you never, you know, you never really come to appreciate how important the fans are, the audiences, the crowd is. I mean, I could watch a football game without a crowd. I could watch baseball without a crowd. It's just wrestling. There's something about wrestling that you need that instant feedback. You need that, I don't know, that gratification of something being done was happening, and you need that motion that comes from after someone speaks or someone does a big move or after a big match.
You know what that reminds me of? How the fans are important in comedy shows. You can't do comedy without an audience. You need a reaction because in order for you to know what's working, what's not working, what's going on with what's getting over, what's not getting over. That's the whole thing about wrestling. At the end of the day, you know, wrestling of course is a entertainment sport. You know, you drop down all those details, but at the end of the day, the goal of wrestling is to get over and get your character over. Because at the end of the day, if you're over, that means you're going to sell merchandise. That means you're going to get on TV and promote the brand. If you're over, you're winning. And without an audience, just like how it is in comedy shows, you won't know what's working. You don't know if that joke is funny or not. You don't know if that joke, what do they call it, is killed it or not. Mm. Same thing when it comes to wrestling. You don't know if your character is working or not without an audience. And no, social media doesn't count because there are trolls. I mean a legit reaction from the crowd, like off the bat. That's how you really get a feel of what's working and what's not. And when you don't have that, it's kind of like, well, I think it's right, so I'm going to continue to do it the way I think it's working. And that's why WWE has been so shit lately. And for the past year, I think it's been horrible for the fear of fact that there hasn't been a crowd for Vince to go back on and go, oh, I guess I have to do something else. Like, there has been no crowd. You know who Vince has had for gratification and reassurance? His yes men in the back who will say yes no matter what. So that's where the problem lies.
Yeah, and Vince isn't aware of what's going on social media. You know,
he listens to Bruce Pritchard saying, yeah, this works and it sucks. Yeah. And there's no crowd.
He's not conscious of what people are saying on Facebook or on Twitter. You know, he's not on the pulse of that shit. It's funny.
I was watching Shane McMahon's the Complex sneaker store shopping, mm-hmm. where Shane goes sneaker shopping.
Yeah,
and they asked like, "Yo, Vince got a pair of J's," and he's like, "He doesn't even own Nikes. The dude has Stan Smith Adidas from the 70s." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Shane said it's simple. Vince does two things: he works and he works out. He doesn't even sleep. So if you think he's on the pulse with comedy and pop culture, there's even a surprise that he went to the Dave Chappelle concert. Supposedly, Triple H and Stephanie forced him to go to the Dave Chappelle show. So for everyone out there who thinks he knows culture, he doesn't. No, and nor does he want to.
It's funny that you mentioned the comedy club, because I was at one recently, and you miss that sense of being a part of something when you're in the crowd. You know, even if it's a minimum group, even if it's just a little bit more intimate where it's not a larger crowd and you're going back and forth, listening and hearing and probably, you know, partaking in a comedian's routine or material and such. It's such an open and liberating thing to do. And you get that sense that that's what happens in wrestling, that the wrestlers themselves feed off that crowd. They feed off of how, you know, the vibe is at that moment when you're about to pull off a big move, or you're in the middle of a promo and you're getting everything over that you're putting out there to the universe. And it's crazy because in the beginning we sat there and we went, what the fuck is wrestling going to do without that? You know, and for the most part, you had AEW, who was already just barely a year in, and this hits. They couldn't just fucking go to the archives like WWE could have. WWE could have just told everybody, you know what, until we get this shit organized, you guys could watch old footage of fucking WrestleManias on Raw and then SmackDown. Yep. You know,
but the show must go on.
Yeah, AEW couldn't do that. And then, you know, with the restrictions and state by state, what their rules were going to be and their mandates and such, it was like you didn't know what would happen to wrestling. And with WWE, they went and they said, fuck it, we'll just do empty arena stuff. And you go, okay. Then you realize that, yeah, that doesn't fucking work. That is awful.
Right.
At least with AEW, AEW said, hey, you know what? Since we have our own group of people, we have our own wrestlers, we're getting them tested, and we make sure that all this stuff, and make sure that everybody's safe, we'll just have our wrestlers in the crowd just to put, and they, you know, far be it to say that it worked. They had their heels on one side, faces on the other, and just hearing a crowd meant
something. It was better than nothing at that point. Right. At that point, we were at pure desperation where it was like, I'll take that. Now that we've progressed to the point where we can have some fans back, now it's like, okay, I don't want to hear these indie wrestlers singing Judas to get a job. But back then, it was genius. And if you go back to the episode when that debuted, we gave that the most praise, and I'll sit here and say, my mind does not change on that. You know, when Back's Against the Wall, they figured something out. They didn't throw a bunch of screens on the wall and said, hey, if you don't cheer for Roman Reigns, I'm kicking you off and giving it to the next guy on the screen. They made it work with the best that they could. I'll give AEW credit there.
Well, it just leads to when, you know, we had that moment when Stone Cold came back on Raw and there was nobody in the crowd before the
Thunderdome. And he even said it sucked.
And it was like, there was nothing for it. You couldn't. It made you realize that, yeah, this can't work without the crowd. This is awful. So,
yep.
WWE,
what do you think? People are actually saying that this past year in wrestling was so bad, but not because of, you know, their own faults. It's because, like I said, the comedy shows were closed. Wrestling wasn't. And I kind of put those two hand in hand there. Do you think that wrestling fans as a whole should forget this past year ever happened and just said, hey, listen, it was the fault of the world. They tried to give us something. In terms of the record books here, should we just give them, these companies, the green pass for the past year?
Because
it was horrible.
No, because AEW was still able to produce something. They still were able to draw some kind of numbers. They were still able to draw some kind of storylines, be it all over the fucking place, but they still were able to produce something in relation to gaining an audience of attention. And WWE is just one of those that just fell by the wayside and was just sitting on their laurels and said, fuck it, we'll muscle through this and we'll find a way out of it. And one way that they did that was with the Thunderdome. You were the first one that, you know, got into the Thunderdome. What was your impressions of it when you first heard about it?
I thought it was a fun idea to have some sort of I thought it was an excuse. It was a way to not have an empty arena. Like I thought it was interesting. Using technology we have today to bring fans in the audience, even if we couldn't be there in person, it gave us an opportunity to still be a part of the show, because wrestling also has to do with being interactive. We get a dose of interaction at wrestling shows by reacting. And while WWE added the fact where you have to, like, you know, you have to get a lottery to get in, and then once you get in, there's a whole process to start up your screen, and then during commercial breaks, wrestlers speak to you. Like, it was a cool idea in promise in the beginning. Like, in the beginning, it was fun, it was new, it was exciting. And I remember I was in the studio when I was in the Thunderdome for the first time, and you even agree it was fun as shit. I think the game alone of trying to find yourself is fun. You know, wrestling aside, the fun of being able to try to find yourself in the audience, which we did. We found me. It was very quick, but we found me in there. I thought it was a cool idea. Did it stay cool? No, because once you find out that the people in the back forced you to cheer, give a thumbs down, and not be, I don't know, yourself, the fact that you couldn't wear non-WWE merchandise sucked, and it got boring. I went from me rushing to get into a pay-per-view to me not giving a shit and not caring and never wanting to be in the Thunderdome again. So it was a lightning in a bottle idea. It, you know, but at first, when it comes back to your question, what I think originally, I thought it was a smart-ass idea. I thought it was WWE checkmating AEW actually saying, hey, whatever, you got your cheap indie wrestlers. We're bringing the fans back in a way that only we could afford, because y'all can't afford all these screens. Y'all can't afford this technology. We can. So I thought it was their attempt to checkmate AEW.
I thought it was a very ambitious way of bringing the audience somewhat back into the product. Just to see something instead of just empty seats and just an empty arena with just lights was something. It was even horrible when it goes to show you that WWE doesn't even have any microphones on in their ring, because you don't hear them slam anyone. None of that shit. Nope. Sounds awful.
The mics are all around the screens and around the back, because they have the piped in fucking noise.
No, but I'm saying even before the screens went up, it was just like you don't hear the ring, and it's awful. Like, you want to hear this. I would have given them a break because the crowd making noise that you don't hear the ring, but when there was no crowds there, you didn't hear it. It sounds dead. But, you know, when they put up the screens, it was just like, you know, it almost like a World of Tomorrow and shit, where, you know, it reminded me of like the scene from Batman and Dark Knight, when he had the room that had all the cell phone towers and shit all connected, and he had everything going on where he could see everything. Or like in Matrix, the same way, when you could see what was going on in every aspect of the Matrix and shit.
Right.
It looked cool. It had that aesthetic that it was like, okay, this can work. I think what really lost the edge, or the ambiance
the fun.
Yeah, the ambiance for it was the fact that the piped in sounds just fucking killed it. It just sounded,
and honestly, it made me feel stupid. Yeah. It made me feel stupid because I'm over here chanting for my people and going, yo, I want them to hear me. But then I look back and it's like, you can't even hear me. Like it's funny. They tell me not to curse, but then at the end of the day, you mute me anyway. So it's like, why the fuck do you care? I understand the idea where it's like, oh, if we unmute 400 people, they're all going to do stupid. They're going to hear babies crying in the background and fucking someone saying, dinner's ready. Yo, Phil, dinner's ready.
But you know what? Not really, though, because if you at least, you know, there's a way that to mix, you know, reality with manufactured. And, you know, some people might have the, but this is why you're on the job, because you could.
We made it work.
Yeah, you could weave out. Yeah, you could weed out all this stuff. You could weed out what could be good audio and what could be non-audible and shit like that. You could have found a way to make it work, to not seem as though that we're forcing an angle to go over with our sounds. But in reality, when you look at the screens, everybody's like, nah, this is not what I'm cheering for. I don't want to see this shit. This is what I want. But the ambiance, the look, it sold, and it and I think that it actually kept WWE relevant for a while. I mean, it became a thing that people were still able to watch the show because they had that feeling of a lot of things happening at one time. And I thought that when they said they were going to put screens, I thought it was going to be like maybe like 100 screens or some shit.
Not a fucking whole light show.
Yeah, they went all out. And that's what happens when you have that resource, and you've been in the business for so many years that you could be able to put together something like that. And you got to give it to WWE as well, because they were able to put that shit together in just a couple of weeks. Hey, that was quick what they did.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like they gave it their all.
You know, and I think that was just the other thing. And back to your first thought about did the lack of crowds hinder the year of wrestling? Of course it did. but is an excuse? No. You still got to go out there and perform. You still got to go out there and wrestle. You still got to go out there and put on the show. You know, it's always been a wrestler's dream to perform in front of 10,000, 15,000. But where did they first get their starts at? With the fucking hot dog and handshakes where five people are in the crowd or three people are in the crowd. You still got to go out there and perform and make something happen and look and make it look good. So you can't hinder the fact that you know, just because they didn't get the fan. What are we talking about? Even for years, we've been booing the fuck out of Cena to turn heel, and they didn't fucking change it anyway. For years, we've been telling people not to fucking, we've been saying, yo, fuck Roman, and they didn't turn them heel until the fucking crowds left. So it's not like they listen to the crowds anyway.
Right.
But them, it's about when the fuck we want you to, we want you to be a part of this. And that's when basically is a reflection of how the whole crowd noise manipulation and the screen interactions and all that. That's basically, once again, it's almost like fucking, WWE's like the Nazis of wrestling. Is we tell you what to do and we tell you how to follow.
Oh no, 100%. And it's sad to say this, but
you're a fucking communist of wrestling.
I don't look forward to watch WWE anymore. Like, you know, like I know that once the fans come back and I'm gonna enjoy it again. I know I will, because even if it sucks, the fans are gonna boo it out of the fucking butt. Like, there's gonna be a teacher in the classroom. You understand what I'm saying? There's going to be someone there to tell Vince, this ain't working, bro. Fans will be loud. They will. WWE fans are passionate. Either they're happy about the product or they fucking hate it. And the way it's going right now, I totally expect these fans to walk in that building. Of course, be hyped the first week. Hey, we're back. In 3 weeks when Raw still sucks, Vince to fucking hear it. I asked that question before, if, like, we give them the green pass. I guess I could change my opinion there. Not the green pass. I meant more of like a, can we Men in Black that last year and flash that fucking light in our eyes and go, yeah, let's just pretend that never happened.
With the flashy doohickey.
It's like, hey, look at this thing. Oh, what happened? Is Daniel Bryan still WWE champion?
No, I think
as fans, should we do that? Because I'm sorry, like, not in terms of AEW, because like I said, AEW tried. Like, listen, as much as we give AEW shit, they tried, and the wrestlers being there was definitely a better alternative than the fucking Thunderdome. Believe me, I get it. I'm talking about WWE. Do we put that light in front of our eyes and Men in Black this shit and go, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna forget, because I love wrestling so much. Let's just forget that ever happened. I think 20 years down the line, we're gonna look back at the Thunderdome era, and Brian Zane's gonna make a Thunderdome era video and look back and go, "What a forgettable year." But they tried, and we'll give them the old slap on the back. You tried your best there, pal.
You punch on the arm like, eh.
But yeah, but story wise, I'm not going to remember a single thing that happened this past year in WWE, because it was fucking horrible. The only thing I'll remember is I'll remember from the Thunderdome era? The Hurt Business and Drew McIntyre carrying that belt after WrestleMania during the dark way days of pandemic. That's all I'll remember.
Roman Reigns. But that's the other thing you got to take in consideration as well, because, you know, during that time as well, you had WWE really had to be creative. They split WrestleManias in 2 days. You had 2 years of WrestleManias where it was split to 2 days, and it actually worked. The second one, you got a crowd, which was a beautiful fucking feeling to hear a crowd back at Mania. You got where they had to be creative, where the cinematic matches got involved. You had the Undertaker and AJ Styles and Bray and Cena. It got creative in that moment. You had when the Money in the Bank, where, you know, they made it a big cinematic match as well. You had where they literally, they said, listen, we got to do something. At least we're doing something, as, you know, as we're going along. And yes, it's drudgingly going bad, but we had the Edge and Randy fights. We had both of them. One was the greatest match of all time. We still had moments. Like you said, you had Drew McIntyre beating Brock Lesnar. You had those moments. And to me, as I said, you can't blip them for that. I can't even blip what happened even across the world when you had New Japan come back and they had Wrestle Kingdom, even though they had such a big fucking problem over there. Impact, even them moving from where they had to move to, and they had their own no crowds, and they found a way. Even some of their pay-per-views were still fucking interesting. It took a lot for companies to still survive, and I think with the Thunderdome, it was I have to say it was a bit of a light at a tunnel that you probably could have said would or could have went out, because, you know, like I said, they could have closed up shop and said, you know what, you guys are going to watch fucking, you could go into the vault and watch fucking Mr. Perfect versus Bret Hart
No offense to a local friend, but they could have pulled a House of Glory and closed up shop for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been that. You could have said, yo.
By the way, where the fuck are you, House of Glory?
Yeah, I'm going to have to put out that milk carton photo again.
Yo, because I think in a few months, it's been 2 years.
Yeah,
which is crazy. Crazy. 2 years without House of Glory.
Yeah,
that's a different. That's a different day. That's a different topic for a different day. But
I think the Thunderdome with its I guess was in its intricacies and how it was put together, and it was a great effort. You know, the pageantry, the looks, and it actually made them work and do a little certain things too. They a lot of stuff they were able to do that they couldn't do with fans, like, you know, the injury to Big E with Apollo Crews, being able to do the effects with the Bray Wyatt and the Randy Orton shit. You know what I'm saying? There were things that they could still pull off that they were trying to be entertaining, but they could do it because of the crowd wasn't present there. So they you got to give them their just due when them trying to do something. Because at the end of the day, they could have just sat down and said, well, you know what? Just take this and fucking eat it. Fucking, that's just what it is. But, you know, they did their best to be somewhat creative in the Thunderdome.
Yeah. It's a great effort. I mean, I'm happy that it's over. Thank God. Happy that it's over. But I will look back and give WWE a pat on the back for trying. Like you said, it could have been way worse. As much as we complain and bitch and moan here, it could have been way worse. We could have gotten literally reruns for the next past year, and nobody wants that. So I'm grateful for what they did during the Thunderdome era. It switched locations a few times. It gave us a few good stories, and it created a chance for us to still be involved during a terrible time in our lives that will. We'll always remember 2020. We will. And when it comes to wrestling, one day we will have a cutting a promo on 2020 when this show reaches its 45th anniversary or whatever bullshit. But it was fun while it lasted, Thunderdome. I'm happy it's done. And let's just see how it is with the fans again, because I cannot wait for them to give Vince a taste of reality soup. This shit fucking sucks.
And going on next week's cutting a promo will be should WWE have the master reset, hit the master reset after SummerSlam, because
The answer to that is yes.
That'll be your way of saying hitting the blippy bloopy stick on Men in Black. The Nero neutralizer. So we'll possibly have a conversation about that. So guys, don't go anywhere. We have great conversation with our guy SRG Universe's own Super Show. Steve Resk stops in to discuss his progression in the past year, how they came through the pandemic themselves. They didn't just stay low-key and not put together some kind of a game plan. No, these guys actually went balls to the wall and got themselves a partnership with MLW and other companies out there. So shout out to them. Also, we discuss on there how to get us on board. As a matter of fact, as soon as I get over here, I'm buying me a deck. I'm going on right now to the SRG Universe website, and I'm buying me a deck. Oski and I, we're going to learn this fucking game, and we're gonna play each other in this shit, because the shit looks fun, and you'll hear more from Steve Resk about
hell yeah, motherfucker.
So guys,
motherfucker,
don't go anywhere. Stick around. We will return. Check
play
you guys.
Some cards, motherfucker.
See you guys in a second.
What's up? I'm RZT85, and you are listening to Turnbuckle Tabloid.
When I remember the early days of fatherhood, I would take my child and put her in front of the TV, and whenever Raw, TNA, or whatever wrestling was on, she would just sit and watch it and have her blocks or whatever it was, but would still be drawn into the pageantry and the buffoonery that was happening in wrestling. Have we got to that level with our children yet? Have we do that? Have we introduced them to the world of wrestling?
I do. I definitely introduced my oldest one to wrestling, and depending on what day of the week, sometimes she's super interested, sometimes she's not. But she loves her character in the wrestling game. I definitely put it on. Like, we went away last month and we caught SmackDown in the hotel room. So I'm like, Daddy's watching SmackDown. We watched some like old wrestling DVDs on the rides up there. And sometimes she's super into it. And other times she just kind of falls asleep, you know, tends to be older, but she gives it a chance.
Yeah. My only, cause she's the only one I have. I'm like, I can't have another one these days. Are you kidding me? My AARP card is coming soon. Like, how could I get another one these days? But, she'll be 14 in September, and, she hasn't been on it as she used to be, but she still gravitates to it when I'm home. She's like, oh, so what, you watching wrestling tonight? We watching Raw? And I was like, yeah. But if it's independently, I think she only just likes the quality time. That's just what it is.
Yeah, for sure. And I think my daughter knows that I'm like, all right, Daddy watched enough mermaid shows this week. Like, we're putting on NXT TakeOver for an hour, right?
Have you brought her to shows and stuff like that? Have you brought her to like the indie shows?
I brought her to an indie show in House of Glory, and it was real funny because it was the first match was Smiley. I forgot who he was working, but it was like a casket match. And he like did a double buckle bomb, and on the third one, he threw the guy over the top rope to the floor, and it was like a sickening thud. And she was screaming, crying.
Oh my god!
Yeah, she was real scared. I mean, it was a crazy spot. And like, you're sitting there telling her like, "Oh, it's, you know, they're working together. It's fake. There ain't no faking a guy getting thrown over the top rope." And then it was the CZW angle. And Ken Broadway came running out, and he got up on the stage.
Right. Yeah, I was there at the show, yeah.
He called somebody a pussy, and the crowd was chanting, "You're a pussy," and there was my daughter up on the chair chanting, "You're a pussy," having no idea what she was saying. And I was dying laughing because the guy behind me was like, "Look at this little girl, you know, chanting, 'You're a pussy,'" and he was laughing. And he said he read my T-shirt, and it like sent them to supershowthegame.com.
Right.
And he ended up, you know, being a player of the game and a pretty good friend of mine after. So it was pretty funny that was how we met. That's how he found us.
Yeah, I remember when I took my daughter to the early days of House of Glory. It was funny because early on I wouldn't take her because I wasn't quite sure whether she was ready or not, or like the certain things that went on the show. Not to say that House of Glory was like risque or anything like that, but you know, they had their moments, like you just mentioned, they had their moments. But you know, we would also have here at the house, we would have the wrestlers come in and, you know, sit in for interviews and stuff. One of them in particular would be under a mask. And when he came to the house, of course he didn't wear the mask, but at the show, she would like him. She loved the gimmick, him being under the mask. But when he walked into the house without the mask, she didn't know. She would like give him the look like, "I don't like this dude in my house." And then finally, when I told her, I was like, "Yeah, that's such and such," and she'll go, "No, it's not." I'm like, "Yeah, that's
right." They don't even want to believe it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, "Yeah, that's not." But guys, having a conversation with the man, we haven't spoken in a while. It's been over a year, and you've gotten real, real busy lately, and awesome, fantastic look for our guy Steve Resk from SRG. And wow, man, the pandemic has been good to you, sir. I have to say, the pandemic has been good to you. How's everything going? Have we been able to avoid COVID and all this?
The pandemic as a whole, you know, I got hit just like everybody else. I didn't avoid COVID, unfortunately.
Oh, man. How did that take you?
I went to what I called the Red Christening.
Wow.
We went to a christening, and about 14 of us got COVID from my family.
Wow, the Red Christening.
And I got lucky because I was home with my wife and a newborn, and my wife or my newborn didn't get it, and I stayed isolated, and I worked, you know, remotely for a while. But I got to tell everybody the same thing that I was saying for a long time is you have to be very careful. This is something that is definitely very real and something that needs to be taken seriously. And even while we taking it, you know, pretty seriously as a group, we got a little lax, like, towards the tail end, and a lot of us paid for it. Luckily, you know, all of us pulled through, but I have a lot of friends and family that, that weren't as lucky.
Yeah, no, I know the sentiment. I work in the field, and yeah, it was pretty rough, you know. And I also know that you do outside of SLG, you had other works, and I would figure that, you know, you had interactions or other, you know, meetings where possibility where that could have occurred. But the Red Christening, that's actually a good one. It's like, yeah, if you're gonna go out, it's like, why there? You would think that would be the safest way not to get COVID. But,
yeah, we went. That's how it ended up going down. But, you know, luckily, for a while, I've been doing SRG stuff full time. So, you know, when COVID came, I didn't really have other obligations. And we got a really nice community of gamers and wrestling fans. And through technology of like Zoom and online play, we were really able to not only keep the company afloat, but keep people connected and occupied for what was a really long year for a lot of people.
I'm impressed with not only how the game has flourished, but also how the community, the wrestling fan base, has also been able to gravitate to it. I'm still at a loss of getting into it because, honestly, if it's a video game, I'm gonna pick up and play. I'll learn it quick. If it's a certain kind of card game or whatever, I'll pick up it quick. I with this, I've you sent me links on instructions and stuff, and I'm still like, oh, I want to get into it. I'm more of a visual. I was like, if you had a YouTube link to show me like instructions how to play it, I would probably get into it more because I have a deck and I want to get more decks. But just a quick understanding, because we probably spoke about it a couple of times before, but just a quick understanding for people who are new to the show. Where did the idea come from?
I mean, I love wrestling. I love games. I played some wrestling games when I was a kid, and they were all great, but I really felt like they didn't capture like a game that made you feel like you're having a wrestling match. So, you know, a lot of other games I played kind of were like games that just had pictures of wrestling on it, right? And they were great games and they had great concepts, but Super Show is really designed to feel like a wrestling match. And we say you could live all your wildest wrestling fantasies without ever taking a chair shot. And, you know, we should come with a disclaimer. Don't try to put anybody through a table when you're playing the game because it's going to feel very real. And you're rolling dice and you're playing cards, so it's very back and forth and it can be unpredictable because of dice rolls and momentum swings. And you really do feel like you're a wrestler when you're playing it. And that's why we've been able to grow the game so much, because not only that, we have such a great community behind it where people were able to create their own federations and factions and title belts and book their own shows. You know, just last night on Twitch, we did our independence dance where it was all our champions competing live on Twitch with matches. And people are able to cut promos and really, really get into it. And that's really always what I wanted to do is, you know, every kid to me wanted to be a superhero or a wrestler growing up. And for me, this game really kind of lets you live that wrestling vibe. Like right now, I'm the Intergalactic Champion, a title that was created by one of our players. And I'm the first ever 2-time Intergalactic Champion, most title defenses of all time, which I accomplished in a 24-hour period. I have my next title defense tomorrow night. And we have real belts. There'll be a referee at ringside for the match. And if I lose it, you know, I'm going to be passing the torch over. But it really does feel like a real wrestling promotion. And that's really what we've always wanted from the very beginning. And that was the inspiration for the game.
That's the reason why I really wanted to get involved in it, because I wanted to have those kind of nights. You know, I used to have, growing up, you know, we would have our card games. I would have, you know, spades night, or we would play Texas Hold'em. And it was always fun to just sit around with a group of friends, just, you know, playing cards and doing stuff. But, you know, you get older and you also get a different variety of companionship or a group of friends that come to hang out. And one night would be cool to have, like, you know, a super show night where everybody has their decks and we pull out and have a couple of drinks and just play. And I thought that aspect of the game was really cool, to where anybody who was into wrestling or not, they will gravitate to this game. And I said, and you always told me it's an easy pick up and play, but to me, it's just like, I have to see somebody doing it. I'm like, I have to.
Some great videos. I even at some point, would be happy to jump in a Zoom room, show you some stuff.
Yeah.
The beauty of Super Show is it's very, very simple to learn and play, but there's a lot of strategy. Just like if I taught you the strategy to blackjack, right?
Right.
You know, you could play and you could win a couple hands as long as you know what you're doing, but there are still people that become like experts and masters at it.
Yeah, like splitting aces and all that, or, you know, when they hit on a certain, like 16 and all that. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and just like in wrestling, when do I stop a card that you're trying to use? When do I let you hit it? Right. How do I bait you out into doing something? And there's just a lot of strategy that goes deeply into this very, very simple game. You know, because it takes about a minute to explain the rules of the game. We've had 6th, 7th, and 8th graders playing the game, you know, in after-school programs. And we also have world championships where we have hundreds of people competing. And, you know, the beauty of it is our world champions are able to lose a match to somebody who learned how to play because there's dice rolling involved.
Right.
You know, odds are you going to beat the world champion? No, but you could. And that's, you know, not something you could say about other games. And that really makes it fun and unpredictable. As a wrestling fan, right? Like that any given Monday or Sunday, that an upset could always happen.
Have you heard any comparisons from players who, of course, because, you know, to be honest with you, this is, it's a world of geekdom that we all love, and it all ties into all that. But have you ever heard any comparisons to players who've played Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh or Magic and said that it's similar or even better to play the Super Show as, you know, as per the other games?
We have crossover from all games, but we always offer, you know, almost to a parody where if you're one of those people who wants to rules lawyer everything and everything be long, drawn-out terms, like, go play Magic the Gathering.
Right.
You know, like, we're literally here to play wrestling cards and dice and have a good time. And that's not what we're about. It, you know, sometimes we joke around. We have a tournament with 100 people, and somebody have a rules question, and we'll be like, "Figure it out yourself," you know, just something like that, right? Because we really want the experience to be playing wrestling cards. And for me, Magic is very hard to play, and it to be a fun experience. It's just very serious. It's very competitive all the time. Don't get me wrong. Super Show gets super competitive when it needs to on some of the big events, but you're also going to see people laughing and screaming while they're playing. Right. You know what I'm saying? And you don't get that from other games, where we have a saying here at SRG Universe where community comes first and competition comes second. You know, at the end of the day, we're really more about the fact that you spent your money to go to a gaming event or travel somewhere for vacation, and you had an insane time because people were cutting promos and, you know, having a blast playing the game, rather than it being a chess competition, which other games sometimes get, like Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon. You know, there's not really that excitement aspect of it, where in those games, it's almost like the smarter player is usually going to win. And there's a little bit of variation. That's a factor too, but you're rolling dice, you're engaged. You know, you have kickouts where pinfalls, you know, you're kicking out at a two count. You know, we encourage people to crowd around when we have a big match and cheer just like they would for a real wrestling match.
Right.
You know, in other games, like when we're too close to Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh, we get noise complaints where people will tell you to, you know, and security will come on and be like, tell people to calm down. And I'll tell the security guards, listen, by all means, you can tell them to be quiet. I'll back you up. That's your job. But like, I'm not going to tell these people they're having too much fun.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to be the one to break that news. Because, like, these people paid their money to be here, and it's great when you have a tag team match or a triple threat match. And imagine, you know, we've had 60 people crowded around the table and hanging on every dice roll that happens. right? And like when a pinfall happens, you have the crowd counting, and you're going, one, two, you know, and then they kick out and people are screaming like it was actually a false finish on a big match.
Right.
So it's been compared to that, but like not as it's the same on how different the experience is.
So you've been in the arena to where there's a Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh match is going on, or matches are going on around, and you're with Super Show, and you all are in one area like a con or something, and there's so much competitiveness going around, not only between players but also between different areas of card games, and you guys have been the spotlight of the event.
Yeah, I mean, we one year at Gen Con, which is the biggest gaming convention in the world, ticket for ticket, we outsold games that were giving away $10,000 in prizes, you know, and we literally had 120 people show up for some of our events. And again, we had an absolute blast. You know, we bring in a GM who GMs the events, where like you have other games where you go to a tournament, right? And it's very, I don't know if you ever played competitive other games, you know, you guys are going to play five single rounds of Swiss, and then you're going to have a top cut and a playoff and the winner wins. Like, that's not how Super Show events go. You know, the GM is going to pair you up against matches. And then if you make the top cut, it's going to be booked like a wrestling match. You can literally say, you know, round one, I want James. Me and you are going to dance round one, call out your opponent. You know, round two, the GM is going to put everybody in a steel cage match, and you might not have been prepared for a steel cage match, and you get screwed, you know, or it helps you out, or maybe it just hurts both of you. You know, round three, whoever's left, there's nine people left. Guess what? We're having triple threat matches, right? And then we have things where they're called like GM's or boss's favor. Like while playing the game, you can earn a favor from one of us, and that lets you influence the playoffs and things like that. So again, it's a much more interactive, storyline-driven thing when you're at these events, when we host them. And to me, it's just so much more fun because people are having a good time together rather than, you know, I want to be the guy who won all these games and became the champion.
I really legitimately want to get involved in it because it's something that I feel that I can do even at home, and say like I mentioned earlier, spending time with my daughter, that her and I could have these kind of nights where it's, you know, my night off and stuff, and it's just her and I, we just, you know, shooting the shit. We could pull out our decks and just play. I actually bought this again. I don't know if you've heard of the game. There's a game called Book It. It's a wrestling board game, and I got it because of the fact that there's not many wrestling games, you know, sort of associated to the genre. There's not a lot of board games associated to it. I bought it. Looked like a fun game where it's like you're a promoter, and it seemed like when I pulled out the instruction manual, it looked like a Bible. I said, okay, that goes away. I was like, I'm not. All right.
So I haven't played Book It. I hear good things about it. I mean, there's other games like Smack Talk Showdown, which are fun, but like there are different aspects of it. Like Book It, the fun is, you know, you're booking the wrestling promotion.
Right.
You know, Smack Talk Showdown, you're like cutting a promo, right? Like Super Show, the gameplay is actually having the wrestling match, which a lot of games don't do that well, right? Especially in an easy way.
Right.
But like what we've done is we've actually expanded on that. We've actually incorporated all that stuff into the gameplay experience. Right now, if you're cutting promos and doing well, you'll earn title shots on our global federation level, right? And people that are booking promotions and booking shows, that, you know, for them it's amazing. I just got back from a show that was hosted by a federation called Rust Belt Wrestling. You know, Dave Marisak is the director of operations over there, and with COVID, they had a 50-person cap on the event. They sold out the event in 8 minutes, and people traveled from all over to play. And the next day, some guys went to an amusement park, and you know, they able to book shows just like an independent wrestling federation would book a wrestling promotion.
Right.
And they have these organ. Not only do they have a tournament that people play in, but they actually book match cards where they have featured matches throughout the day, and it really tries to incorporate everything about wrestling, not just, you know, one certain factor on those things. And I think that's why wrestling fans have really gravitated to. And again, somebody like you who's playing casually at home with their daughter can have a blast with a box set. You know, the box sets come ready to play out of the box. And then somebody who's wants to be like a champion Magic player or a champion Yu-Gi-Oh player, they can go and go on the website, study the decks, and fine-tune their deck the way they want it. But the point is always, what's great about Super Show is they could show up and play you, and you still have a good chance to win. Why? Because we designed the decks to be very good out of the box, because that's really what we want. And it, the game is designed where you guys both have 50-50 chances of winning dice rolls, you know? So you could just get lucky. I'm sure you've played other games where your dice just gets hot sometimes.
Yeah.
You roll 3 tens in a row.
Yeah, usually that was CeeLo. In my hood, we would play CeeLo. And that's
I was a big CeeLo player, too. I loved it. You know it. Like, the odds I roll 456 are the same as you.
Exactly. Right?
So, but sometimes you throw four of them in 10 rolls, right?
Yeah, you get the hot hand when you're the bank. It happens.
Yeah.
I like I said, I was there. We've known each other for a few years now. We met at the at House of Glory. We've seen each other, and I have to say that from the ground floor, I've been impressed in your and very in tune on your hustle, and your hustle moved real big this past year. One day I'm just clicking along and I'm on the YouTube, I'm on the pages, all of a sudden I'm on MLW and all of a sudden SRG is mentioned, the Super Show, and I'm like, whoa, where the fuck did this come from? There was a swell of pride and I'm like, yes, yo, I knew these dudes from day one. Like, I was so happy to hear about this. Yes, this is where we at. So if you like that, not to go in full details, but if you can, like, how did that partnership happen?
Yeah, I mean, I try to be as much of an open book as possible, and I appreciate everything you said, because I really feel I came from nothing in a sense. I had no industry background. I had no real financial backing. And, you know, from a while, just a kid from Queens with a dream to do this, and to see it in developing and getting to where it's at today is incredible. I mean, I'm always tough on myself. I joked with my friends who came by like my office and saw all the stuff that's there. And he's like, you know, what would you do if you could go back 7 years ago? You know, what would you tell yourself? And I'd be like, you don't work for WWE yet? Like, what's going on? But we really are proud of where we've come. So many people fail in this industry, especially, you know, things like Kickstarter and me not to get there. And for a game that started with 6 characters and now to have over 400, some of them indie guys and guys like MLW, it really is, you know, a dream come true for me. And every day we get better and we do different things. We've always had a good relationship with a lot of independent wrestlers. It started off with House of Glory. I'll always be grateful for what they did, getting me guys like Amazing Red, Smiley, and Ricochet in the early stages. That opened up the door for AJ Styles when he came in. And then we networked with Colt Cabana, and Colt Cabana introduced us to the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. And we had some of the biggest names on the early stages before they had blown up. You know, the trajectory was always there. But little by little, we've established ourselves as reliable in the industry and something that indie wrestlers wanted to be a part of, and being able to support them through, you know, royalties, which was always the goal. And we actually recently took on a gentleman by the name of Griff Briggs, who was a player and ended up becoming our COO. And he had taken on a lot of handing over contracts to them, because James, I do my best to be polished, but I'm not a businessman, suit and tie, polished type of guy.
Right. I grew up there's certain people that's just built for that.
Yeah. Like, for me, if I go up to a wrestler and I talk to them, this is what I'll do for you. You know, I don't need, and you're finding out in today's world, you need it. I don't need a piece of paper outlining all the things. I give somebody my word, I come through on it.
Right. You know?
And like, we've had a lot of great experiences with that, and a lot of pretty bad experience where people will agree to you and shake your hand and have a deal, and you'll spend your money to get the wheel in motion, and you'll never hear them again, or even worse, they'll be like, hey, that wasn't. So we actually had brought on Griff to work with John, who's my partner, on, you know, just very organization and contracts and reaching out to different people. And we've done things in the past with House of Glory. We've done things with Impact Wrestling. You know, we did some events at Bound for Glory. And that got on the table through Griff. And they said, listen, we're going to do this draft. It's going to be big. We're looking to go, you know, to television. Let's see if we could work something out. Now would be the time to do it. And I know that there are a lot of people at MLW that had grabbed my attention that we were able to work with. You know, guys like Hammerstone has always been somebody I felt would be a big draw, and being able to work with him and Davey Richards and Fatu and the latest one, LA Park, was really just an amazing experience. You know, we had worked with the partnership, and then the partnership had said that we would be able to get access to talent, and the talent would be able to get royalties and stuff. So it was a really awesome experience, you know. And they were able to work out something that worked for everybody, and I hope we can do more stuff with not only them but other companies in the future, because we really want to be, you know, the bridge between all these companies. And what I love about Super Show is that I could have a character that's modeled after me. Literally, you could play as the SRGBOSS, or you could play as a fantasy character that I created, like El Super Hombre, and then you could open against guys like Hammerstone or Upper Coming, or legends like AJ Styles and guys like Amazing Red, and it almost has that like Super Smash Brothers feel.
Right.
And I really just love that aspect of it. So being able to work with MLW and get on board where, you know, we negotiated being the official game for the draft and be able to promote their talent as they're doing big things is really just a great partnership that I hope worked out for everybody.
I'm telling you, the brand, I mean, in the past 3-4 years and such, it's just, it's, I like I said, I remember having you on the show when I was at my old apartment, which is some time back, and I remember the ground floor of it, and even then I was a Nimrod who still didn't know how to fucking play the game, and I'm still trying to try to learn how to play this shit years later. But even then I had a confidence and a good feeling about it, because I said this is something that not only is it good tidings and good and a good look for wrestling fans, but also for those who are into, you know, recreational playing the games and getting to something to where it not only, even if you're not a wrestling fan, if you could just pick up and play and just you draw in the crowds and you draw in the rest the old wrestling fans into coming back to wrestling and such who haven't been in it in a while. The game is open to interpretation, to how, like you mentioned, how the matches can go out at any time or any on a roll of a dice. How is it that you guys select, or not even select, like is it a selection process, or is it that wrestlers come to you and they ask you for, you know, can I be in a deck? Can I have my card? Or do you guys have like a breakdown? How is it that it occurs that way?
It really is case by case. You know, we have some people that fans of ours go to shows, and we have these things that are called spectacle cards. They're really fun. You can reveal them like once a match, and there are different ones where they're designed to help you if you're losing, right? So you could have, like, To the Rescue, and whoever signs it comes to help you in the match. So, for example, if you got, like, Matt Hardy to sign it, you could have Matt Hardy come to the rescue, or Jeff Hardy distracts the ref, or whoever you get. Recently, we had people getting the Soup Nazi signing it, and Rikishi and Britt Baker. So you get, like, these – it's a cool little aspect of having that person help you because they signed it. So a lot of our fans get those signed at shows, and then people inquire like, hey, what's this? And our fans will say, you know, listen, reach out, and they'll set you up where you'll get some sort of royalty the same way pro wrestling tees would, right? And some people reach out. Sometimes we get a contact email, but it's just such a crazy world because you get some people who see how great it is and they're super happy and we've done multiple products for them. And then you have other people that are like reluctant for whatever reason, and I'm not sure why. We don't ask for people to sign over ownership. We don't ask to own anything that they have, just permission to use and sell it. We don't force anybody to promote. You know, we rely on our own promoting. If they want to send out retweets, that's wonderful, but we don't hold them to anything. We offer, you know, partial upfront royalties on it where we bear all the risk. We really try to make this risk-free for wrestlers. And we have a lot of people that jump on it. We have a lot of people that jump on it and then we never hear from again. So it puts you in this weird like purgatory, right?
you had somebody signing off on all their images, and now they don't answer the phone anymore. What do you do? You know?
Do you get a blowback from wrestlers who see their ratings once you sign them, and you see their ratings or their what was their gauge of their strength and all that? Do you get a blowback and from wrestlers? Hey, wait a minute. Why'd you give me?
Yeah, something? We've had some. Like, we've called an audible. With, like, now we try to ask. So we had like Ricochet, like 6 power, man. Are you crazy? And we're like, no, you know, that's the number one thing. Everybody wants 10 power. But we try to explain that the game is meant to be fair, right? So every character gets 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. It's not really a comparison, right? Like if you have a 7 power and somebody else has a 10, that doesn't mean that's stronger. The way we do it is what they use the most, right? So for example, a guy like Hammerstone is 10 power in the game because he's more inclined to pick up people and throw them and slam them and stuff, right? Where not saying pound for pound he's stronger than Ricochet, but Ricochet is more likely to do a flip and be acrobatic in the ring, so he has a 10 agility.
Right.
You get what I'm saying? So, like, it's really a ranking of how well you use those skills rather than a direct comparison. But we definitely get people like, oh, you know, you gave me a 6 strike. Do you even watch me wrestling? It's like, dude, you have punch and kick in your repertoire as striking, you know? That you like, you have to be a big striker. You got punch, kicks, haymakers, roundhouse kicks, uppercuts, elbows, you know. So we now, to avoid that, we just ask people what they think, and if they have no clue, we say, well, this is what we were thinking, and just get them to sign off on it.
So you mentioned earlier about having tournaments, and we're able to still have matches going on Twitch and Zoom and all that. So If Turnbuckle Tabloid wanted to have their own Super Show tournament or league or stuff, right? So I can do this from my house, and somebody else could have their deck in their house, and we could play the same way, and I could live stream it that way.
Absolutely. So what we do is, you know, especially during COVID, you know, we've had on our small events around 12 people, on our largest events about 90 players, and sometimes we have people in between, 40, 50 people, and everybody gets in a Zoom room, and you have a host, and a host assigns them what's called breakout rooms where they play, and it's like going to a digital table, and you sit down, you know, me and you go in breakout room 1.
And you could be in your house, and I could be in my house.
Sometimes I don't even have pants on, James.
Nice.
You know, no, you only see the play area. You don't see nothing. That's just the table. But you're from the comfort.
You're shortchanging me by not having pants on because might not want underwear. But that's another story. Yes, sir.
Underwear, yes. I'm just saying. But you get what I'm saying. You're in the comfort of your own home.
Right.
So, you know, the cameras doesn't necessarily need to be on your face except your play area. And it's nice because sometimes you maybe not in the extreme if you don't have clothes on, but you have your pajamas on, right? You're nice and comfortable in the house, and you make a nice thing out of a Thursday or Friday night out of it. And it's something that started out through COVID, and it's something that we all really look forward to because you get a bigger turnout sometimes than you would in your local store, and you don't got to travel anywhere. So it's nice to digitally be hanging out with 30 people on a weekend where you might not want to go out, or if it's raining or something like tonight. But we definitely encourage the in-person play as well, you know, if everything is safe. But that's exactly what we do. And digitally, you just do like a Zoom call or a FaceTime call, and you play the game. You make sure that your play area is visible. You have a dice tray or something where you roll your dice. On our like featured matches, the referee will ask you like what rolls count, anything that's visible or anything only in your tray, and make sure everybody's flat, you know, on the same page that way. And it's a blast. It really
is. Fucking awesome, because like I said, this will be something that, you know, I might incorporate for the show, and especially on the social media pages, because that shit it would bring in not only your audience but actually a community that would embrace this, especially for, I see like the older guys who wrestling fans, and you know, they have families and they take care of stuff, but if they are able to have a couple of nights off, or they could sit there and like they have their moments for fantasy football or such like that, they could do the same thing with this. This is actually really fun. I, like I said, You really got to show me this shit quick, because I gotta learn this.
And you play, you come hang out, and I said a lot of it too is, you know, some of our most prominent figures in the community are guys just like you, where they play to have fun. People like their personality to support the other shows that they have going on,
right?
You know, and it gets incorporated, and it's not only about like you being the best player, right? Because the game is easy enough where you're going to do fairly well regardless. You know, you might not dominate when you're playing, but that's really what the Zoom rooms are about. You come in, you do this, and then you bring in guests just like me, and that's how these things grow. You know, right now we have a show going on Twitch that a fan had started up called Tell Us About Yourself. Every week he brings in a Super Show player to talk about their own stuff. And, you know, people watch and they subscribe and they get into it. And it really... that's our goal, is to expand the wrestling and gaming community. And we know that the game is an asset in doing that. You know, it's not the end all be all, but people get together to play the game. It's nice and fun. And then they're talking wrestling trivia and we have a nice little hangout section.
Before I let you go, because I know you have something that you got to deal with after here, which is I want to promote as well. It's like, you've gotten into the podcast game as well.
We did, I think, 35 episodes for a program called Why Wrestling, and now we might be where the Why Networks is looking to come back, you know, pretty strong. Whether or not we're going to be signed for them for a second season or go out on our own is kind of up in the air, but we, through COVID, that was another real dream come true for me. We did the Why Wrestling show. We had some amazing comedy skits, some interviews that we called Call in the Ring. You know, basically, I encouraged wrestlers to come on board. And this is not going to be a dirt sheet. We're not trying to put you in the hot seat. We're just trying to talk to you about what's going on. And we had some amazing conversations, some insights, some backstage stories. Then we have interviews where we're talking 30 minutes about your favorite video game, your favorite music, your favorite comic books. And I think that a lot of people didn't get to see the size of those wrestlers. And that was just awesome to be on that side of it. And now the team that we have put together, they've been producing some stuff, and we're moving the show in a different direction, but we've had a blast. And as I said, to me, it was heaven sent in a time of COVID to have a day of recording and a day of editing and being able to stay so busy during that time and link up with wrestlers and stay connected. It was really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, so what do you think of the grind of doing podcasts? Like, a lot of people listen. For us, it's, man, listen, 260 plus episodes in the books for a 4-year span. A lot of people say,
I always have respect for you. You know, I always promote and check out Turnbuckle Tabloid whenever.
Yeah, you have, and I appreciate that. You always showed us love, man.
But more respect than ever, because everybody wants to be a podcaster, and everybody wants to do it, and to do it well and to execute as well as you guys have been doing for 4 years. It's a lot of work. You know, just getting a group of people on the same page every week is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And then staying current and talking about what's going on, and staying energized and staying interested and staying connected with subject matter, making sure you get out there and promote it and get it uploaded every week. It is a lot of work. And, you know, we had a great team, guys like Brian Wafer Schmidt, you know, Dylan, Christopher Guardino, everybody that had worked with us on that, the Grump, Danny Thunder, these guys, and we put out some funny stuff, and you know, we covered so many different topics, but it is not something that you're going to be able to accomplish and do right if you don't put the effort into it. There's just, you don't just wake up, turn on the equipment and record,
right?
Because it would just, that you would have radio silence after 5 minutes. You got to prep yourself leading up to the episode. You got to stay on point, stay interesting while you're talking. And then when the episode ends, you got to do everything you got to do to promote it, and then you start back up again. So it is a weekly grind, even if you're only recording for 2-3 hours a week.
Yeah, people don't understand, and this is why I say, a guy like you, you know already, because you did it with Super Show, you've done it with Dr. Clothesline, which is another product that I've worn. We've all worn it here in the household. We love the apparel as well, and now with your podcast. We know over here that you a man on your grind. You already know what it is, and I have to congratulate you for all the accomplishments you made on your business aspects, but also on the outside, getting your hustle on, as you know, family and everything else. And once again, you're a guy from day one that I saw and I said, this guy, I was like, we got to get this guy to be a part of Turbo Tabloid one way or another, man. I fucks with him heavy. This is my guy. But Steve, please let everybody know where they can get you at, where promote everything that you can, and just let everybody know where they can get SRG and everything that's tied to you.
Well, supershowthegame.com is where you can find the number one wrestling game in the world. We can live all your wildest wrestling fantasies without ever taking a chair shot. And just for the gamers out there, it is number one rated, not just by our standards, but by Board Game Geek. Gives us the highest rating of any wrestling game ever. But you can also find us on twitch.tv/SRGUniverse. Tonight is a show called the Super Show Dojo, which for new players is definitely to go in there. Subscribers can enter to randomly play one of the dojo hosts. Tonight it's Mr. Loudmouth Leo Larynx. And if you play, if you get picked, you pick an item for sale on supershowthegame.com and they play it forward partner. So for example, if I got picked, I could say I'm playing for my man Jay Santy on the Turnbuckle Tabloid. If I win, me and Jay get that item totally free. If the house wins, the item goes on sale, so you'll have a chance to win it at a discount. I mean, to buy it at a discount anyway.
Wow.
It's a lot of fun.
You are a man who knows how to bring in a fucking crowd. I'm telling you, that's a fucking nice fucking work right there. That's a nice gimmick there. That's cool.
And it's a lot of fun playing in the game. You know, we get new players. When we see new people in the chat, the players will pick you to get some free stuff because, like I said, Super Show is a great game. I'm very proud of the game itself, but I'm more proud of the community that surrounds it than anything. There's also a Facebook discussion group I recommend that's for people interested. There's a daily discussion going on all the time. But definitely check that out. Jay, I want to pick your brain for a second.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
Of course.
I love what's going on in the wrestling world, just in general. I think wrestling is at a great position. I know people have some gripes with WWE products. Some people complain about AEW, but I, as a wrestling fan, really enjoying it. But I got to talk about something that just hit today, and I'm sure you covered this. Uso, man, getting himself in trouble again.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't know how I feel about this because it's a rough world, but I think at some point you think there's got to be some sort of serious, you know, action taken. I know he's out of commission. What's your thoughts on this and what's going on?
Well, it's funny because you being in the podcast world, and I know you get hit up once people hear these breaking news and these big instances that happen in wrestling. People message you or they'll hit you up on the pages and they'll ask you, what's your thoughts about all this? So all I got blasted with was this morning was from listeners and stuff asking my opinion on it. And I always tell them, check us out next episode on Turnbuckle Tabloid. But
yeah, no, for real. That would be my thing too. People ask a big question. No, I'd be like, tune in to Talk of the Universe this week on Twitch.
Exactly. Yeah, you should promote it as well. With this, I have to say that, first of all, it's not racist. It's not stereotypical. It's not what people may deem as something that's very, very negative towards a people's culture and background. But the Samoan culture is like that. They're very, and you know, they're not for nothing. I always call them, they hood. They are hood people. And one of the biggest thing that they do is that they love to drink. That's just, you know, just like Spanish people, just like Indians, whatever. We love to drink. Now, outside of that, the of course, the irresponsibility is getting behind a wheel and driving. And I think that it's more of a disregard to authority than anything else. And that's just them as an individual. And that's, I'm talking about the person. I'm talking about like Jimmy or anybody else who does it. It's a disregard. As per, you know, people were asking, should he get a slap on the wrist? Should he be suspended? Should he be, at the end of the day, you're part of a business, and the business has to throw a punishment to you. You got to take it, and it's gotten to a point where you got to get punished for what you do. It's just whether or not, to me, I enjoy my beverage or two here and there, but I also got to keep in mind of what I'm responsible for, family, people around me, the job that I'm associated with, especially you being in front of the television and being part of the machine. You're in a big angle with one of the fucking, it's probably the best angle that's happening in wrestling right now.
In a while, right?
Yeah,
in a long while.
And you're not taking responsibility. Everyone's like, well, you know, he has a problem. His problem is it's more associated with, in my opinion, it's more about the disregard of authority. It's that. And it's not a work. It's personal because you've already been hit X amount of times for this. So your whole idea is, yo, I don't give a fuck. And somebody needs to, you know, do a reality check. They did it with Jeff Hardy. It happened with him. It happened, you know, Randy had to get hit with his shit until finally they said, yeah, we're not going to fucking care about your marijuana shit. But no, I think that he needs a reality check where they be like, all right, we'll hit you with this because you know what? Your brother's still available, so we're going to take you. We'll let you get hit with it.
That's what I love about the wrestling. I love talking wrestling, not just the in-story, just the industry and the business, because it's just like a different world, right, as a performer. And there's Jimmy and Jay, and then there's their on-scene personality. How do you separate the two?
Right.
But also, like, you know, in your day job, if I screw up and do something stupid, and I don't like to throw shade because nobody's perfect, right, like, it don't affect your job, you know? For the most part, unless I'm a driver, if I get a DWI or I do something, my job doesn't care as long as I show up Monday through Friday, right? But, like, WWE is different because fans have a real hard time separating the reality of, you know, these people are different from their person that they portray on TV.
Did you see what he blew? A .205. That's impressive.
yeah. That's like you're way reckless at this point, right?
It's like, whoa, you're almost hitting 500 in the fucking baseball. That's impressive, sir. But, you know, in reality, you know, and not, you know, well, I am making light of it. Fuck it. But, you know, honestly, there's a certain level in which that WWE is going to either handle it one or two ways. It's either we handle it or you guys handle it. Because if we got to handle it, it's going to be a problem. And and WWE will make a spectacle of it. They will make it a media attention kind of shit. They don't care at this point right now. They will make him an example if they have to. And then the tag to that will be like, well, at least we got him free rehab and shit. But they will make an example for him. They will do that.
Yeah, I mean, as a business owner, you're Vince McMahon. Like, do you want to, on top of the workload, and be like, damn, I got to deal with this crap today? You know, people. So I could see that could possibly be something that's in the back of his mind. You know, he wants this guy to get help, but also he's like, yo, what are you doing? I'm making you a superstar, and you can't keep your shit together.
Right.
Where I gotta have this come across my desk all day long. You know, nobody wants to deal with that either.
Yeah, and you're a man who runs a business and such. Especially if you hear some, and we've seen it in even the past couple of years, we've heard stories of wrestlers who've done outlandish shit. And at the end of the day, it's like, I don't give a fuck if you're making X amount of dollars for me and you're a draw. If you're doing some fucked up shit, you can't be here, we gotta wrangle you. We have to do something about this because you're hurting yourself more than anything else, but you're hurting your brand and you're hurting our business. So we look bad if we continue to allow you to do this. In Jimmy's case, I think Jimmy has been blessed with the talent that he had. And after, you know, the years of being associated with not only his brother, which could be a problem as well, but being associated with his brother and also being a tag team, that he finally was able to break away and have some success where everybody's like, you know, you even have people sitting there talking about, yo, you could make him a champion of something.
Yeah, I see you. You're an individual. One of these guys can take the belt off Roman.
Did right.
It happen? No, but people are saying it now.
Right. So maybe, you know, there's, like I said, there's maybe a correlation to with that kind of, you know, the mindset of, eh, fuck it. You know, I got this position. Or it's just like, yo, I just don't care. I really don't care. And it's sad because look what he got going for him. But at the end of the day, I think WWE is going to, they're going to treat him for now with kid gloves until they have to do the Jeff Hardy treatment on him.
Yeah, and I mean, you can tell by that, the door is always open. I think at the end of the day, people can say what they want. I mean, I'm not a fly on the wall. I don't know what goes on, but I think that you did nail it when you said people want the person to do better, not only for selfish reasons. It's better for them. It's better for the company.
Yeah.
But it gets to a point where they want to, you know, make sure that people straighten themselves out, because that's just better for everybody. Jay, I want to thank you again for having me. It's always fun. It's who knows what will happen with the Uso story, but it's definitely fun to speculate and talk about. Anytime you need me, reach out. I'd love to come touch base with you. And if there's any things that we can do in the future together, just let me know.
Thank you, sir. Matter of fact, don't hang up yet, because I actually want to talk to you about something quickly. But other than that, guys, this is our guy, Steve Ress, SRG Universe, Super Show. Got you. Listen, if I'm going to promote anything right now, Hard Bodies, because this is something that I'm going to be doing that I plan to be doing in the future, is learning the game. I know it's a pick up and play, quick and easy, but I'm kind of dumb on certain shit. But Steve is going to show me how to do this. And once that happens, I'll show you guys how to do it as well on a live stream. We'll work on it. And guys, don't go anywhere. Stick around. We will return. Check you guys in a second. Turnbuckle Tabloid.
3, 2, 1. Tabloid.